This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to the Munganess St. Louis Honda Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now, Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Big thanks to Jim Nance, Mike Schilt, and Harrison Bader with Mike Claiborne last hour. In fact, I want to go back to the Bader interview. I was really getting into that just before the news. Let's hear a little bit more before we continue on in our 11 o'clock hour with some other material. This is Cardinals center fielder Harrison Bader with Mike Claiborne. You can find this full interview at claibsonline.com.
Again, you know, obviously my days revolve around doing my best to get in some baseball work and work out to just keep my body moving and active. But besides that, it's been a lot of that.
You know, I want to go back to something you said about reaching out, and I've kind of tried to do that as well. What's it like when you hang up the phone from somebody who never expected to hear from you or was surprised you thought enough of them to reach out?
Yeah, I think you hear it in their voice from the moment they go, hello.
Yeah, know? They look at the caller ID and say, wait a minute, what's this guy doing here calling me?
Yeah, exactly. And also their perspective is interesting too, because, you know, I'm in my own world. I'm constantly growing in my own world. But for them, you know, their perspective is, you know, maybe they see me, you know, playing on TV and baseball, and they think I'm somebody different, or they think that my personality's changed or something about me's changed because of baseball. And that's, it's nice to show people and show some of my friends and that's not the case at all, you know, and I'm still the same person, maybe refined in a couple different aspects of my life, but you know, the same kid that was really stomping grounds in New York, I mean, it's the same mentality, it's the same kid. So hanging up the phone definitely feels good, knowing that I'm probably gonna be on that person's mind for at least a couple days.
Yeah, at least that's all that counts. Hey,
exactly.
You know, for you, spring training is behind you, but I know you work out religiously in the off season. So you went through nearly a whole spring training. Now you have this downtime. So what's your workout mode like? Are you trying to prepare for the season, or have you tried to step back a little bit and try and maintain that postseason, that off season workout program?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely have taken the approach of like somewhere in between, you know, I'm staying active every day. I'm moving every day, but I'm not in that off season everyday mode, routine, because there's just no need for it. And also, you know, your body can get tired, man. You know, subconsciously, you know, we've gone through cycles, where my body's not really expecting to be lifting every day for this long. And that can be tiring in itself. So in some days where I do feel it a little bit, I'll just back off from lifting. I'll just go for a jog. Just to get some sweat going. But you know, besides that, it really has revolved all around baseball activity. So, you know, in the off season, you do a lot of lifts that are just centered around getting strong and whatever. You know, now every lift since it started has really been about, geared towards like my swing or, you know, like moving around athletically in center field. They've all been really to just basically say, if I got a call tonight saying report to the field tomorrow at 6 a.m. to play baseball, would I be baseball ready? And that's all I've really done. So that'll be a lot of just like band work, you know, resistance, stuff like that, and just do my best to keep my arm in shape. You know, like I mentioned to you before, I had Paulie down here. We were pretty good, but he's not here right now. So now it's kind of up to me to just do my med ball work and just weighted ball routine, and just keep the muscles just ready to fire when they need to. Nothing crazy.
You finished spring training and you felt like, I know you felt like you had a pretty good spring, and I think you started to put some hits together and have some really good at bats. And sometimes an at bat doesn't always translate to a hit. Maybe it translates to a walk. What did you take away from the spring training you were part of that you want to continue to build on, so when it is time to go again, you'll be ready to go and even be better at it?
Yeah, no doubt. I had a lot of competitive at bats. Some at bats that weren't competitive at all, which is part of the game, but there were a lot of competitive at bats in there where, you know, I worked my way back to a 3-2 count and I lost the 3-2 pitch. I ended up striking out. But you know, you can't focus on that because it was early. It was spring training. It was inside 40 at bats. I just wanted to just go into spring training, be a hard at bat, you know, be a consistently solid at bat. I've realized, obviously, we've all realized that there are a number of ways that I can do damage in the base pass. I don't necessarily have to hit a line drive every time. I just got to get on base and find a way to, you know, just be a tough out. So with that said, I think I did a good job of that. And again, man, in this time, the most important thing is just about staying super positive, staying over positive, really. And, you know, it's easy to let these days kind of go away. So, again, just staying positive, just moving around and trusting that. When we do pick up, which hopefully will be soon, you know, it's all just going to click right back the way it needs to. And you just got to trust it.
That is Harrison Bader, the Cardinals center fielder. Good stuff there with Mike Claiborne. Again, that full interview can be heard at claibsonline.com. We appreciate Claibs sharing that with us today, talking to the Cardinals. And we have more Cardinals on the way. Tony La Russa is coming up next. John Mozeliak at the bottom of the hour. And Adron Chambers, who scampered home with a winning run in what is today's game on KMOX at noon, the 2011 classic that will be known forever as the Carlos Marmol game that turned the tides for the Cardinals and gave them a shot, another open door to make the wild card at the end of the regular season in 2011. All that's on the way on KMOX. Thanks again to Jim Nance, Mike Schilt, and Harrison Bader and Mike Claiborne up until this point. I'm Tom Ackerman, back in a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports on a Sunday morning.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
We're having a good time. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. Let's look back at 2011 now. So that season was unbelievable, as we know. We've been playing a game every single day here on KMOX. We have one coming up at noon. And manager Tony La Russa, right in the middle of it, in a season that was so up and down. And at the point that we started this run on KMOX here was when they were 10.5 out. Well, going into today, they are 3 out. But still, with 5 games to go, it was just pressure packed every single day for manager Tony La Russa, the Hall of Famer, with our Chris Raby.
We had hung in there playing a little bit above 500, but man, we had so many problems, especially with injuries and most notable losing Adam in spring training. But then it only happened once in all the years, but Chris and Albert got off to slow starts. But people kept picking each other up. You know, we had heroes every day. Just, you know, we didn't go crazy, but we stayed a winning club. And then we got to, July, and Mo made the trade that made us deeper and better. And August came along, and the Brewers went nuts. All of a sudden, you know, instead of just being close, we struggled there for right before, you know, we got hot again. And we just fell so far behind, it just looked like the club just got discouraged. Because after all the hard work for 4-plus months, you know, we were, you know, it looked like it wasn't going to be possible. And then the stories are true. You know, we had the dinner. We got swept by L.A. and the Knights of the Kai Flavier. And Adam Wainwright stood up and said, hey, I know these guys, and they're never going to quit. And all you got to do is get hot. I mean, he said it just like that. And I think more than anything else, it showed the veteran leadership on the team. I think they got together and, at that time, we had two priorities. You know, we did not like Cincinnati, and we didn't want them to finish ahead of us, and we didn't want to mess up the respect that we had earned all year. So let's just play hard. And the guys thought, look, treat each game. It's only 32 of them. You know, treat each game like it's the last game of your life or the 17th World Series. feel that urgency. And then, and sure enough, once we did that, like you say, beat the Pirates and swept Milwaukee. And about that time, Atlanta lost a few games. And, you know, then we started getting greedy.
You know, I talked to both Waino and Karp last week, Tony, and talked to Waino about that dinner at the MAC and talked to Karp about him addressing the club after the Dodgers series. For you as a manager, what did it mean to have that kind of leadership in the clubhouse? Because, you know, we hear in the media and as fans all the time about closed-door meetings or whatever. You never hear about them when they don't work, right? Or when a team limps to the finish. But to be able to know that you've got guys in that clubhouse who know the temperature of the clubhouse, who know when to speak, who know when to pull back, what did that mean to you and your staff, and what kind of role did those guys play off the field?
Well, that's really a great question, and there's a couple, three answers to it. One of them is, you know, I've heard it so much, way too often, that, you know, players are, you know, everybody wants to win, and chemistry and leadership, it's not a big deal. You know, they're so wrong, because the season's so long and together so much, that if you had really good leadership, it is a huge difference maker. And just to backtrack, as a young manager with Chicago, Carlton Fisk and Greg Luzinski, Jerry Kuzman, guys like that, they proved to me how much you need in the clubhouse. Once the manager and the coaches go to their lockers, what the position players say to each other, led by the leaders, is absolutely critical. Happened again in Oakland, and the whole time that we were in St. Louis, they were the difference makers, because our staff, year in, year out, worked as hard every year. But when you had great team leaders, and, you know, we had Edmonds, we had Albert, we had, you know, Yachty at that point become a leader. We had them throughout, you know, Daryl Kyle, you know, Matt Morris. You know, it goes on and on and on. In the early days, Stottlemyre, Andy Bennis. I mean, it was, but in that time of year you're talking about, what it means is that guys in the clubhouse are going to hear a very consistent message from the guys that need to have the most respect. And when they speak, guys listen. And if they don't, they get grabbed around the neck and make sure they listen. So it's a, it was, without that, you know, what would happen in September and October would never have happened.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty amazing, because obviously, you know, from a big picture standpoint, when a lot of people, and probably people outside St. Louis, think of 2011, we think obviously Game 6, right? Like one of the most iconic games in baseball. But going back through all of these games in the last couple of months of the season, really all year, as you alluded to, there's kind of a different story or a different, you know, chapter for each guy. Everyone contributed in their own way. Everyone bought in. And I imagine that's something that you can't fake. It's easy to say on paper. It's easy to say the right things in spring training. But over the course of a long year, especially when things aren't going like maybe you would draw them up, that isn't always there, is it?
No, it's something that's not automatic. It has to be created, a priority, and the guys have to work on it. You know, it's just really corny. They have to earn each other's respect and trust and show they care. And I always include the entire staff, you know, the equipment guys, the trainers, everybody that touches that big situation is a part of it. But I think the lesson that you learned is, and about that season, if you look at how many times we faced adversity, by the time we got to that last test, our guys were convinced that they were tough enough, and it really was unfair at many places. But that's who they were, and they were not going to disrespect it. I mean, if you think about it, it's pretty simple. You just go out that day and play and pitch as hard as you can for the right reasons. And then whatever the outcome, at least you can look yourself in the mirror.
I already just thought about Tony La Russa and all of those times that we would go over his players, and that sounds very familiar. He was an excellent leader, really was. And it's no coincidence that he won two world championships here in St. Louis and knocked on the door of a third, actually. It's just that he ran into a very hot Red Sox team in 2004. Great to hear from the Cardinals manager. We're talking 2011 when we come back. Skip Schumacher, a member of that club, will be with us next. John Mozeliak is also on the schedule this hour. He'll be live. And Adron Chambers reflecting on some awesome plays that he contributed to late in that 2011 season. Back after this, Tom Ackerman, Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Munganass St. Louis Honda on South Lindbergh.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back to the show. Skip Schumacher, a member of the 2011 Cardinals. He's now the associate manager of the San Diego Padres. Chris Raby catching up with him. Remember the Brewers' Nigel Morgan running his mouth a little bit? Actually, not a little bit, a lot. And that created perhaps some bulletin board material for the Cardinals. Is that a thing, Chris asked Skip?
It's 100% a thing. And, you know, we, as a Padre coach now, you know, we try to let our young kids know that, you know, Twitter, social media, everything, people read stuff. And the last thing you want is a bullseye on your back. You know, they're coming to get you no matter what. And now if you start talking, you know, now we really want to get you. And I'll never forget Nigel Morgan talking. It just helped us so much. I'm grateful for it, to be honest with you. You know, at the time, you know, all I wanted to do was clear with him. Winning was like secondary at the time. I just wanted to clear with him. But it just really worked out for us that, you know, the wrong guy was talking. And it just obviously, you know, John and all those, you know, really good veterans over there, probably was like, you know, the last thing we need is a guy like him talking. And again, it just helped us tremendously throughout the season.
How about to skip the rivalry with the Reds in an organization that you were subsequently a part of? And I just talked to Tony about 30 or 40 minutes ago, and he said, you know, we were focused. We didn't want the Reds to catch us. And the Reds were saying that they would love to catch you. They wanted to get the 500. But, you know, one of the things that strikes me is how Brandon Phillips, for instance, he goes out of his way to praise St. Louis fans and the rivalry with St. Louis. And, you know, we get these little pockets of rivalries in the division when teams are good and when teams are battling for playoff position. And I think from a fan standpoint, it's great. You know, the more the merrier in the National League Central. You want your team to win, but it seemed like losing two of three against the Reds after you guys swept the Brewers kind of lit a fire under you guys, so to speak, as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, extremely talented team, you know, on the mound, you know, kind of underachieving. And then, you know, when there is that rivalry, everyone that comes into St. Louis wants to beat us. I mean, that's just, you know, who we are, what we've done the last few years. And so that's the challenge. And, you know, them wanting to get, you know, every team at that point now kind of changes their goals, right? You have a goal in spring training, you want to win the World Series. Then when you kind of feel like you're out of it, maybe the goal is to get to 500, maybe the goal is to get to the wild card game, you know, whatever it is. And so the goals change, and their goal was to try
maybe it's to spoil a team season, right?
Exactly. It could be anything. And so you know that going into it, you know, what the other side's goals are, and then, you know, what you're – but honestly, you're kind of thinking of yourself and your team at that point anyways. And if we don't win, we're out. It doesn't matter who it is. And at that – to me, at that stage, you know, we're just trying to win every single game.
Skip, what do you remember about just the way that Tony started to – manage the bullpen and the way that you guys had so many guys and so many different pieces that were contributing? Because we talk a lot about what you guys were able to do from a lineup perspective and the way Tony was able to roll out different lineups. But, you know, really starting in August, he started kind of the bullpenning, quote unquote, that has become, if not the norm, certainly something we're used to in baseball. And, you know, he and Dave Duncan and the staff were able to really masterfully use that bullpen down the stretch and get the most out of everyone, it seemed.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible what he's done in his career, isn't it? I mean, the most forward-thinking manager, you know, maybe ever, of what he did, whether it was hitting the pitcher eighth or, you know, or whatever it is. But he knew what our strength was. And after the Colby Rasmus trade, our strength, in my opinion, and obviously in Tony's opinion, and Dave Duncan's opinion, was our bullpen. I mean, if we got through the fifth inning, heads up, because we could match up with anybody. The Dotel-Zepchinski trade was, you know, it wasn't big on a lot of people's radars, but now we're matching up, you know, lefty with Prince Fielder, who we, you know, couldn't touch, you know, Scrabble, but, you know, Zepchinski at the time, and Dotel, you know, obviously Braun couldn't touch Dotel, and now we're matching up the big boys, their big hitters with our bullpen. And sixth, seventh, eighth inning, now it's just 0-0-0. And, you know, when Mott took over the closing role, it was over. And so we had four or five innings that we could cover. And, you could always get a day off, the bullpen get a day off because Chris Carpenter's coming right after, you know, that kind of those bullpen days. It was pretty impressive what Tony and Dunk were doing. And getting some guys in September when they would come up, Boggs had huge innings. One guy after another, we're just having big inning after big inning and just kind of all came together.
You know, you just mentioned Mott. One of the things that Jason told me when I talked with him was that he thinks one of the biggest factors in all of this was that not only were you guys playing well and you were playing well when you had to, but he said you guys were just having fun and you were having fun and having a good time around each other, you know, in April and in June and in August and in September and in the postseason, and that there was a confidence in the clubhouse and there was an attitude in the clubhouse that didn't change. You guys enjoyed spending time around each other, and he believes that was a big part of why you were able to do what you did.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, the personalities with Jake Westbrook and Nick Punto and Lance Lynn, I mean, as tough as he was on the field, he's pretty funny off the field. Kyle Loesch was incredible. I mean, there's just personality after personality that just all gelled. You had Arthur Rhodes come in that's, you know, was 40 years old and just as loose as anybody, but a bulldog on the mound. It's just they could not have scripted better personalities with the talent on one team, and especially after that trade deadline. We, you know, obviously made a tough trade with Colby Rasmus, big time prospect and, you know, future center fielder. But what they got in return, not only personality wise, but, talent wise, was just, it was incredible. And, Jason's right. You have to have fun, but, you know, you can only have fun when you win. Honestly, it's not fun when you lose, and nothing is ever funny when you lose. And so those bus rides and all that stuff, they're not fun. They're not fun when you lose. But we kind of got on a roll after that trade, and everyone kind of gelled together. And it was the plane flight, the happy flight, all that stuff. That was real, and it was a blast.
It was a blast for sure. That was a good time. That's Skip Schumacher with Chris Raby. Let's bring in the architect, actually, the man who made those moves and put that team together, and that's the president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, who joins us live at 11:34. You like hearing that? How about Skip Schumacher there? What a great name connected to that 2011 team.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, I've only been on hold for about 2 hours, so I was trying to guess who was that was speaking, and then I finally figured out it was Skip. But great guy, first off, and some of the things that he was talking about, you know, brought back great memories because it really was a team that had like unique energy, and I've been a part of a lot of winning clubs, but I will say, like, bus rides on that team could be very unique. And you saw some things you just didn't know were possible. And it really was some of those new faces that we acquired from that Toronto trade. So, you know, I think when you do those kind of deals, you're always trying to hope you get that sort of positive influence in a clubhouse. And that deal certainly did.
Yeah, I did. I did that on purpose. I wanted you to hear that because, you know, it's good to hear. I mean, you did. You were able to make some deals, and both before the season and during the season. And personalities are a big part of this. I know that you and I have talked about this before, but it's not always about what the numbers say. It's not always about what the metrics say about a player. The human element is a huge part of that, and there's also a very extensive part of your research team that does that as well, doesn't it, Mo?
Well, you certainly try. I mean, I think like one of the things that Skip said was, you know, losing stinks, and you are part of teams that sometimes that really does bother a team, losing. And, you know, the 2011 club did not like to lose. And you know, they wore it on their sleeve when we didn't play well, when we didn't have success. And, you know, baseball's a unique business because, you know, typically it's, you know, how many games above 500 can you achieve? Because ultimately that's going to decide if you're having success or not. In other words, the margins are pretty tight. And so you have your fair share of losing, but teams that truly disdain that or don't like that or find ways to prevent that are the teams that you can really bet on. And, you know, you ask, like, how much research can we do to understand, like, how someone's going to fit in our culture and be a part of our club? I can tell you that we certainly look into it. We've nailed it in the past, and we've also had some huge mistakes. So it's far from a perfect science, but you know, you're certainly trying to hedge your bet as best you can. And, you know, having players that get along is important because, as you can imagine, in the game of baseball, you're together every single day. And so if tensions arise or things just aren't going well in the clubhouse, it can be very problematic. And unfortunately, when those problems arise, it almost spins out of control to where you have to do something drastic typically to solve it.
Men, not machines, as Tony La Russa used to say all the time. John Mozeliak with us on KMOX. I do want to ask you about the game of baseball, as much as you can tell us about what's going on with the game right now. But first things first, because the important thing right now is the people who are out there keeping us safe. And there are so many. I mean, from first responders to those who are working in grocery stores to healthcare workers and on it goes, restaurant and delivery workers. I mean, we see them every day. And I don't know that they kept us safe before this. They've been keeping us safe for a long time, but now they are. And there's an initiative, John, called Rise Up for Heroes. This is a collaboration between the Cardinals and the Blues and others in sharing what makes our region great, raising spirits in St. Louis. This initiative, every other day between yesterday through Sunday, April 26th, during the hours of 5:30 to 7, a six-unit caravan is going to parade through the city's neighborhoods in Ford trucks to spread cheer where our frontline heroes work and live. How great is that? I'd love to hear that.
Well, to your point, you think about all the people that are keeping us going right now, and from the health side to just being able to think about getting your groceries or food. It's really just an amazing group of people right now that are allowing all of us to sort of get through our days. And the pressure, the type of environment they're having to put themselves in. So the Rise Up for Heroes campaign is something that's simply just to recognize all the people that are doing great things for our city and our county and our community. And so for the Blues, the Cardinals to partner and be a part of this, it's obviously very natural. And obviously when you get like Waino and Petro speaking on behalf of this, it plays well. And so, you know, Blues and Cardinals are grateful for their fans and our community. And we want to make sure that we recognize that during a very difficult time, not only for our city, but our state and our country.
Yeah, it's really neat. The routes are going to cover these neighborhoods throughout the region. You can go to riseupforheroes.org to see where the caravan is going to come through your area in the St. Louis region as we cheer on our heroes. These are the true heroes. Now, they're asking you to celebrate at 7 p.m. As you see fit every night, starting yesterday, April 18th, clapping, singing, dancing, however you want to do that for all of our great workers. Buildings throughout the city are going to be illuminated with blue to light up the city and recognize them. And the caravan is going to follow all of the CDC guidelines for precautions against COVID-19. So please remember spacing, mask use, and we urge the neighbors to do the same. And I know that this has been a time that we continue to adjust. John, the world is changing, and our view of the world is changing at the same time, isn't it? We're just each day brings us something different.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, it's hard to focus truly on just the game of baseball right now, because anytime you turn on the news, you read things on the internet, the fluidity of what's happening in our world and in our country, it's moving rather quickly. And changes in how we adapt, I think, are something that's critical. But, you know, we're all sort of in the same boat, right? And it's trying to get through each day and understanding that having that flexibility in your life to allow you to adjust and adapt to these ever-changing dynamics is critical. But, you know, the reality is we're all adjusting to this new normal as best we can. And, you know, I certainly can understand that you know, people are having trouble with it. I don't think I have ever been home for 30 straight days. So it's, you know, I think we all sort of have what we're trying to adapt to. But, you know, fortunately for like my family, we are healthy and you know, just adjusting to our new normal.
Yeah, mine too. And we certainly wish for the best and reach out to as many people as we can. You can also donate money, by the way, on this site, riseupforheroes.org. You can make a donation for the COVID-19 Regional Response Fund. That's going to direct resources to those disproportionately affected by the coronavirus and its economic impact. Again, that's riseupforheroes.org. John Mozeliak is with us. Before we let you go, just a quick thought on, or however much you're allowed to tell us, about Major League Baseball. I know you're in constant communication with the commissioner's office and with your own players, but let us know the state of the game as much as you can let us in on right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't really have a newsflash here. It's really a lot of things are being written about and being speculated about on what may or may not happen. I mean, I think from a very high level, we would certainly love to figure out a way to entertain people because we know that is something that our country could really use right now. But you have to do it in a strategic manner that factors in really everybody's health that's involved in this. So there's a lot of complicated variables to pull this together. And I can assure you that a lot of people are working very hard on this to see if it's even doable. The one thing I have reminded people when I do run into them from time to time, as I'm out walking or catching them on the phone or something, but it is only April and it's April 19th. So to try to salvage something this year, I think is you know, you can have that optimism for that because I still think time is on our side to do something. I don't know exactly what it looks like or how to articulate that, but I do feel like that is one of the things we have for us that can maybe help us get through it.
Well, I appreciate it very much. And in the meantime, we're trying to do the best we can on KMOX to keep people not only informed but entertained. And that's where these 2011 games come in. We have one coming up here at noon that is the Carlos Marmol game is all we have to say. It was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I actually looked it up before this game, right? So the Cardinals are three games out of a wild card spot with five to go. Yesterday was the one where Soriano hits the three-run homer to beat the Cards, and they lose 5-1 to the Cubs. The one before that, Mo, is the six-run inning that the Mets had to beat them 8-6. And
that was the one when Recall missed the double play ball.
Yeah, and it just all falls apart. And then the Cubs beat them 5-1. And then Marmol throws a wild pitch in a two-run ninth. Sorry, I just gave away. But that is what's going to happen here in this game coming up. That's an absolute must-listen at noon.
In a way, a lot of what September was about, meaning like we were almost like every day mattered. In other words, it was, you know, almost like a game seven every day. And so I think that really sort of prepped us for October because it became just this like very resilient team. And I remember I'd always go in and see Tony after a win, a loss, whatever, but we'd always be doing the math and I'd be like, okay, we live for another day. And that's how we approached really the last 60 days of that year. And I'm talking September, October. And when you start talking about these little like games, it's like, there was like almost like a play within a play the whole time. And I might have to tune in now.
It really is something to be able to step back and really appreciate what that team was all about. But also, like you said, these little plays that made up the season, whether they were good or bad, the plays that made up the season, the remarkable 2011 story. John Mozeliak, thanks so much for the time. As always, have a great rest of your Sunday.
All right. Thanks, Tommy.
Thank you. President of Baseball Operations at the St. Louis Cardinals. Quick break. When we come back, the man who scored that run, but also had some really great plays down the stretch for the team. The speedster, the tough-minded hitter and outfielder, Adron Chambers. Some thoughts and some highlights from his contributions next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports on a Sunday morning.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
As we wrap up and get you ready for Cardinal baseball at noon, the Cardinals and the Cubs from the 2011 season, with the Cardinals sitting three games out of a wild card spot with five games to go. How are they going to do this? You know, they're just going to need the Braves to completely collapse. And then get a little luck on their side. Can they get that today? That's the question. Cardinals and Cubs on the way at noon. Big member of that team. All of them were. I remember Lance Berkman saying, this was a team where you could legitimately say, if we don't have X, we don't win the World Series. Everybody played a huge role, including Adron Chambers.
The outfielders play shallow and toward left. With the bases loaded, the pitch, a swing and a drive down the right field line. This goes to the corner. And now Chambers is off to the races.
If you really watch that video closely, I almost fell when I hit second base because I was trying to run so fast. I was so excited.
Three scores.
And then I threw my hands in the air.
Terrio scores.
But, man, let me tell you, that's the logo on my hat. That's my mother's favorite pitcher.
Molina scores.
All of my family, that's their favorite hit. Out of all of my time I've played with the Cardinals and other organizations, that hit right there was like surpasses everything in my professional career.
It's a three-run triple for Chambers. And the Cardinals are breaking this one open. All of this has happened after two outs and the Cardinals lead. It's a 9-6 game in the seventh.
First of all, I threw my hands in the air praising the Most High. And at the same time, it was like you can kind of see me kind of break out of my shell and really, you know, become one with the team.
And Chambers is turning into some secret weapon here, isn't he? That's great. See him dive into third base over there.
That was like my mark, I guess, for me. That was like, yes, because my speed is what everybody knew, and I can hit a little bit. So you was able to see both of those in that at bat.
I was watching the runner score out of the corner of my left eye, Mike, and then watching Chambers fly around the bases. That's his first big league triple. There's a pitch in for a strike.
It kind of set me apart of being like this rookie, even though I was a rookie, but it made me feel like, coach, all right, whatever you need me to do, I'm ready for it.
And both his hits, first two hits in the big leagues have come as a pinch hitter.
It's 10-6 with that bases loaded triple by Chambers.
Everybody, whether it was the officers, you know what I'm saying, the people that were working there, it was really like a big family.
Swing and a foul off to the left by Punto, the ninth man to bat in the inning.
So Stinson charged with three of the runs and Burdick with two. On a three-run triple by Chambers. Didn't take him long to get there either.
It did not.
When I did walk, I had the biggest smile. I got the biggest smile. Slapping hands.
The pitch on the way, a swing and a base hit to right center for Punto. It's 11-6 Cardinals. Chambers scores on Punto's RBI single.
It kind of made me feel that way when I was slapping everybody's hand. That it was just wonderful, man. It was a wonderful feeling to be. I felt like Waterboy. Slap hands, you know what I'm saying? Like
a six-run seventh after two outs. Tolley goes to the mound.
Great comeback tonight, huh?
That's how it was, man. I never looked at the game as being like this big business type thing. I always looked at it as being like just a fun game with some extraordinary ball players throwing 100 miles per hour.
What a comeback. Down 4-0, then 4-3, then 5-3, then 5-5, then 6-5 Mets, and now 11-6 Cardinals.
I just looked at it as,
We had a whole bunch of gifted people just out there having fun, and I was able to be a part of it.
He was the big part of the St. Louis Cardinals in 2011. Adron Chambers right there, the team that went on to win the World Series. That game 7 of the World Series will air here on KMOX on May 11th. But until then, we've been playing a game every single day from the 2011 season, starting with the moment that they were 10.5 out of a wild card spot. They actually were 10.5 out for a while. They were just kind of hanging around. And then suddenly they took off with a couple of big series wins and put them in the situation they are today. So today's game coming up at noon is the Cardinals and the Cubs. Are the Cardinals with just 5 games left in the season, 3 games out of a wild card spot. They need some help. They need things to happen to the Atlanta Braves, and they need some luck on their side. Will they get that today? We shall find out in just 5 minutes. Thanks again to everyone's contribution on the show. Let me run through this real quick. First of all, to our producers here, and that would be James O'Sullivan and Cole Duggar. Thank you very much for everything you've done today. Our guest today, Jim Nance. He was terrific today. The voice of CBS Sports led off the show, went right into Mike Shildt, the Cardinals manager, for a few segments on the Mike Shildt Show. Every Sunday in the 10 o'clock hour, the Cardinals skipper joins us, and he was, as always, wonderful today. Thank you, Mike Claiborne, for bringing us Harrison Bader, the Cardinals center fielder. We played some of that at the end of the 10 o'clock and beginning of the 11 o'clock hour, and you can hear it at claibsonline.com in its entirety. Tony La Russa, the Hall of Fame manager, visiting with Chris Raby, along with his great infielder, outfielder, utility man, Skip Schumacher, also talked about the 2011 team with Chris. John Mozeliak, Cardinals president of baseball operations, was with us. And he was very good today, talking about to Rise Up for Heroes, that great effort that the Cardinals and Blues are putting together, and also his recollections of 2011 and a little update on what's happening here in 2020. And Adron Chambers right there. That was a lot of fun. You can hear it all on the radio.com app. Use the rewind feature. I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks for joining us on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.